You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Tuesday edition, and an announcement. We will be preempted on Wednesday. Normally, the first Tuesday of the month is when our show is preempted. All the shows are in the afternoon. This month, because of the July 4th holiday, they decided to have the meeting this week. My Wednesday show is preempted, so we'll be on the air Thursday and again off the air Friday because we're on a shorter summer schedule. The studio is shut down all Fridays through about the middle of August, so we have a four-day schedule, Monday through Thursday, barring the preemption of shows by the Dallas Community College District Board of Trustees. So I wanted to give you that heads up. We will not be on the air tomorrow. We will return Thursday and then come back for the 4th of July week, Monday and Tuesday, and take the holiday off. I'm not sure whether or not we're going to be open Thursday. Definitely Friday we won't. With that out of the way, this announcement, I'd like to cover four stories today. The one that's getting all the attention, now this should not surprise Americans that follow the law and know the law. The Supreme Court today affirmed by a 5-4 ruling that President Trump did have the authority, not only under the Constitution, but also under Immigration Naturalization Act, to put a ban on people coming into the country, traveler's ban. Now, it was limited to a few nations. What are the nations? Iran, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Libya, Somalia are the big five. They also added North Korea and Venezuela. Now, why? And do the American people support this? I think overwhelmingly the American people do. They want we're concerned about our safety and security, and we do not want terrorists, whether political or religiously motivated. And the reason we have a lot of Middle East as well as North African countries on the list is that is the center of radical Islamic jihadist terrorism. We don't want them here. Let them stay home and kill each other. If the Sunnis and the Shia want to kill each other, keep it over there. We don't want them to come to our country. We want to protect the American people from these savages. Now, the left in this country recently are promoting harassment and violence, as far as I'm concerned, inciting it. And they've been doing this for a while. It's not new. They want to make this a religious issue. Well, let's make it a religious issue. They want to replace our law and constitution with Sharia law. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, if that is why you're coming here, to replace U.S. law and the constitution with Sharia law, you don't belong here, and they should be kept out. So I support President Trump's travel ban. I would actually broaden it. And the problem is an ideology called Islam. They want to conquer the world. They want the world to be under Sharia law. That's what they're about, folks. It's a fundamentalist cult. Unfortunately, it numbers hundreds of millions of Muslims. Now, all Muslims? No. There are several dozen countries that you can come here and travel, but where we cannot vet the backgrounds of the people coming here, and I'm all for extreme vetting, too, then I'm sorry, and President Trump is right. We don't want you in our country. We're not going to take the risk that you're going to become a bomber or use a vehicle to run over a citizens or go into a restaurant bar and shoot the place up. So I applaud the fact that this is a big victory for President Trump. And no amount of propaganda, progressive, socialist, communist propaganda that we're getting from big lie media is going to change the fact. What's sad is it took three revisions to get this. Now, that's partly the administration's fault. But they were new when they were trying to get this ban. You need to coordinate. It's a key word I learned very much when I was in the Air Force. Coordination is very much required when an organization is going to take a position, which means you got to coordinate it with the various departments, especially the Department of Justice and legal counsel. And you don't give it to people that are not attorneys. Not that attorneys should be the driver here. If this was done properly the first time, it should have been passed. Now, what's the biggest problem here? And Justice Thomas, in his opinion, mentioned this. We can't have district judges dictating to what the president can or cannot do. That's not feasible, folks. And I think Congress needs to address this. Remember, our judicial system was set up by Congress. We can't have a district judge in Hawaii or Northern California who does not know a lot of the background that the president does as to why this ban is necessary. And I keep getting back to the fact, if you look at the list, there are dozens of countries that there's no travel ban. Now, some of you might be surprised. I was surprised. Afghanistan, you can travel to the United States. Now, I don't think many are, and that's something you need to keep in mind. Most of these nations, not all of them, but most of these nations are relatively poor nations. Some, especially in the Middle East that have oil, such as Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, they're not on the list. And there are other nations that where the majority are not Muslims, such as India, China, France, the United Kingdom, have large Muslim populations. They're not on the ban. So what's a ban? This is not a total ban on Muslims coming in this country. Far from it. Only a minority of nations and a minority of Muslims are banned from traveling to the United States. And I think that's the way it should be. Although there are at least several others that maybe in the future, depending on what happens, might be added to the ban. So this is a big win for President Trump, his administration. It was a 5-4 decision. The so-called conservatives on the court voted in the majority. The so-called liberals voted in the minority or the dissenting position. One other thing that I have to add here. Most Americans do not follow what the Supreme Court justice does, the Supreme Court justices do, and their various rulings. It's of interest to attorneys and primarily constitutional specialists. I'm not saying the U.S. Supreme Court is not important. I think it's very important. And it does have long-range impacts. Probably the biggest example of that is Roe versus Wade. Now, I'm pro-life, and I think the only reason it stood so far is Justice Kennedy, who normally votes with the conservatives. 80 to 90% of the time, Justice Kennedy votes with the conservative justices. Keep that in mind, but on certain social issues, such as abortion, such as gay marriage, he didn't. And I suspect President Trump is going to have at least two more opportunities in his first term to appoint at least one, if not two, justices. And I think Kennedy will be one and probably a death, because several of these justices are in their 80s. Ginsburg is probably the one oldest and has some medical problems. And because of this, the left is going nuts, because they could see a situation where instead of 5-4, it's 7-2. And to the extent that the justices are young, and they're usually in the mid-40s to mid-50s, now occasionally they'll get someone in their late 50s, 60s, but Trump is leaning towards appointing young, namely in the 40s and 50s, definitely in that range. So usually a justice, if he wants to, and this is key, can be on the court for 20, 30, 40 years, depending on his health and depending on whether he wants to. For lawyers, especially those that specialize in constitutional law, this is a big thing to get an appointment because it's highly competitive. It doesn't mean you get the best people. Far from it. And supposedly, Donald Trump has a list of 25 people that he wants definitely to check out should there be a need to appoint one or more justices. And I think some of that checking, background checks, already happened. So stay tuned whether or not Justice Kennedy either announces his retirement at the close of this session of the Supreme Court, which is Wednesday. And we'll see how the left reacts. Because I believe you could see a overturning of Roe versus Wade because it is unconstitutional. I'm very much a federalist and believe the states should reflect the will of the people. And if the will of the people is to not permit late-term abortions or abortions in general, you need to respect the people in a state. So we might vary to the extent that we have more justices appointed by Trump, whether it's one, two in this term and maybe one or two in the next term. We could have a definite conservative-leaning Supreme Court, and in that kind of situation, I would not be surprised if, for example, Roe versus Wade is overturned, as well as gay marriage. I think it's not the government's business to get into the marriage business. Historically, for thousands of years, it's a religious question as to what is marriage, and overwhelmingly, it's between a man and a woman. Now, I have no problems with a consensual contract. There's a name for it. It's on the tip of my tongue. If two men or two women want to have the effect of a marriage, you can have, they can enter into a contract to protect their rights. And this is an issue, especially where people are in long-term relationships that last many years, some cases decades, and then one of the partner dies, and then you have employee benefits that normally are only given to the married spouse should really go to the surviving party in a civil contract, I think is the term. The other aspect to this, and I'm not going to spend much time on it, both Republicans and Democrats make this an issue of why you need to continue to vote Democrat and Republican. I don't buy that, by the way. I'm not saying that the world would be a lot different, for example, had Hillary Clinton won the Electoral College votes. It's irrelevant how many popular vote she gets. Everyone that's run for president, especially today, knows you need 270. Trump got 306, of which 304 voted for him. That's why he's president of the United States. And if Al Gore had carried his own state, he'd be president of the United States too. They're going to be close elections because the American people are divided. And elections have consequences. One of the consequences is presidents make appointments to the Supreme Court. And I think President Trump will have at least one more, if not two, in his first term. I think he'll have a total of three. But that assumes the so-called liberals are not going to retire. So if one of the liberals dies, and I'm not a fan of death watches, but if someone should pass away, and let's be candid here, when you get into your 80s, you're going to have more health problems. So the probability is that you might not make it into your 90s. I'm not in favor of, I frankly would limit the term to some maximum, let's say 25 years. But that's just me talking. But the Democrats and Republicans always want to make this an issue as to why you got to either vote Democrat or Republican. That's a trap, folks, because both parties today are big government parties, and I'm going to get into that some more, because government spending is so out of control and we just don't have any leadership on it. Oh, we have some talk and people will go on news shows and, oh, we're going to address entitlement reforms, namely Social Security and Medicare. Never seems to happen, especially in election years. Every 2 years is an election year. Meanwhile, the country's going in the toilet. And what's driving this is the fact that the baby boom generation is retiring, and those are people born between 1946 and 1964. And many of them are already retired and collecting Social Security and Medicare benefits, but many more will. So unless the federal government changes either the benefits or the taxes related to entitlement programs, the deficit is just going to get larger and larger and larger. How are we paying for these benefits today? Remember, Social Security and Medicare are a pay-as-you-go system. In other words, the people that are working today are paying for the benefits, Social Security and Medicare, of those that qualify. In other words, for Medicare, it's as you reach age 65. For Social Security, it's 66 or 67. It depends on, again, when you were born. It used to be 65. And remember, in the 40s, most people did not live to 65. In 1900, the life expectancy was under 50. In 1950, 50 years later, it was still slightly under 65. Today, it's in the 70s. And the reason for that is a number of reasons. Advances in science, medical technologies, medicine, research, drugs, especially drugs, and operations that at one time you couldn't perform. Now they're routine. As a result, the American people are, men and women, are living a lot longer, which means that, especially with rising medical health care costs, they're going to be collecting Medicare benefits for 10, 20 years. The same thing with Social Security. So I'm going to talk about that. What do we need to do? Now, we need to come to grips with entitlement spending, but also, you see, what I recommend is, first, you got to tell the truth to the American people. And politicians don't want to tell the truth. The United States is broke, bankrupt. They don't want to tell you that. The only way the United States can go on is to go deeper and deeper and deeper into debt, and that's exactly what's happening. But that's only a fraction of the problem. Now the national debt is over $21 trillion. Remember, a trillion is a one followed by 12 zeros. A trillion equals 1,000 billion. A lot of money, folks. And a billion is 1,000 million. There are not many people that are millionaires compared to the whole population. There are fewer people that are billionaires. And we have nobody that's a trillionaire. We're talking big money, folks, and what it's usually compared to is the gross domestic product, the goods and services, the final goods and services for the entire economy produced in a period of time, usually a year. And this year, it'll be about $20 trillion. I mention that because now the U.S. debt is more than 100% of GDP, but that's, I always refer it, the tip of an iceberg. Most of an iceberg is underwater. What's underwater? And underwater is the right term. We have obligations, liabilities. The U.S. federal government has liabilities. That is, has not set money aside, which they needed to do, and invest it, because we deliberately set up, admittedly under the Roosevelt presidency, Franklin Roosevelt, and because it was pay as you go. Initially, it was going to be set up as an individual account. That was the biggest mistake they ever made. But because of that, and we compounded the mistake under Lyndon Baines Johnson in 1965, when we enacted both Medicare and Medicaid, grossly underestimated the cost. And it's those two programs, actually three programs together, that now, while they ran surpluses, especially in the early years, they're not running surpluses anymore. The biggest problem is Medicare and Medicaid. There are things you can do to fix Social Security, but all of these programs are running deficits. And the range of estimates for what the so-called unfunded liabilities slash obligations is between $100 trillion, which I don't believe that number, that's more the government's number, to over $200 trillion, and rising every day. Because every day you have some, really you have thousands of baby boomers finally retiring. In other words, they apply for their Social Security benefits as well as Medicare, and they start receiving a check in the mail every month or sent to their bank. Most people have direct deposit. And as they get older, people get sicker. Most people are not aware that your biggest medical bills are the last 6 months to a year of your life. So as people live a lot longer, it's usually their last year when their medical costs, their health care costs, kicks in, and eventually they die. But there are big medical bills. And when you combine that with inflation in medical care, that means the liabilities are getting, it's accelerating. We're getting more and more and more of the liability. It's not going down. And if you look at the numbers, there's no way we can pay down, make up for the lack of money. So what's going to happen? They're going to have to cut benefits. They're going to means test the benefits. And they're going to have to increase taxes. None of that is politically popular. And older people vote. They have a lot of time on their hands, and they definitely are listening what politicians are saying. What's tragic about this is not a new problem. I've been talking about this for years, but so have a lot of other people. We could have done a lot to avoid a day of reckoning, is what I call it. There are a lot of things we could have done, and we wouldn't be in this terrible predicament. But it's only going to get worse. I'm not seeing any leadership in Washington, D.C. on this at all. There's no easy answers, and I describe it as doing the heavy lifting. It's going to require a leader with communication skills, but more importantly, courage, to communicate the scope, the extent of the problem to the American people and what needs to be urgently done to avoid financial disaster. I don't think that's President Trump, by the way. I really don't. And he's more or less said he's not going to change Social Security and Medicare. Well, okay, that's the political thing to say. That's what Democrats say. That's what Republicans say. But that's not leadership. You might call it salesmanship. I call it spinning, lying about it, misleading people. The American people deserve the truth. The American people deserve leaders, not only the presidency, but in Congress, House of Representatives, and the Senate, to tell the American people what's been going on and why we're in this mess. But most importantly, what action needs to be taken to avoid the United States becoming another Greece where we can't pay our bills. We're living on borrowed time. We do have a growing, prosperous economy, but we're paying for government largely by borrowing. That's why the so-called deficits, and for those that get confused between a debt and a deficit, every year there's a fiscal year. It starts 1 October. For example, we're in fiscal year 2018. It started 1 October of 2017 and it goes through 30 September of 2018. That's a fiscal year. We budget and appropriate by fiscal year. So the first thing to understand is that. We've been running where we spend more money than we collect in taxes in total, and we've been doing that for over 50 years, folks. I know there's some surpluses there, but not really. Not if you do a full accounting. I'm not going to get bogged down and confuse you with details. The point is, you're spending more money than you're collecting in total taxes. They call it revenues, tax revenues. This coming year, it'll be around $800 billion will be the deficit. We're spending a lot more than $800 billion, but $800 billion is when we're spending $800 billion more than total tax collections. We have a government that the American people can't afford. Congress is living way beyond the means of the American people to support them, and they're truly not doing anything about it. Or very little about it. Cutting a department budget here or there, I always use the quote, they asked the famous bank robber Willie Sutton, why do you rob banks? His answer was simple, that's where the money's at. That's why I rob banks. Well, where is the spending at? It's in two broad categories. Entitlement programs, and that includes the big three, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Medicaid is a program for the poor. If you qualify, if you're poor, either you're not working or disabled and you literally don't have any money, you can go on Medicaid and you'll get medical treatment. Medicare is like an insurance program, but Medicare, and be very careful here, doesn't pay all your medical bills. It's divided between Part A, hospital, Part B, doctors. You need to understand that entitlements is Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. In other words, if you meet the qualifications, you're entitled to the benefit. That's why they call them entitlements. And that's a big chunk of the budget, together with what I call welfare programs or income security programs is the other term that they prefer. We don't want to call it welfare. Well, it's welfare. Those two together are over 60%, about 63, 64%. of the total spending. The rest is what's called discretionary spending. The reason why it's discretionary, Congress appropriates money each year for these departments and the programs in the departments. The biggest one, obviously, is National Defense, the Defense Department, also our intelligence community. That's 18-19%. And the rest, less than 15%, are all the other departments. Now, I'm giving you this big picture because what you need to do first to convince the American people that we're in a financial emergency, you're going to have to shut down departments. You need to give the big picture, and that's why we're shutting down 8 departments, and that should be step one. Step two would be eliminating all the duplication and the waste in welfare programs. I'm for having the government provide benefits for those that are, quote, truly needy, but the problem is today, many people that are collecting under these welfare programs are not truly needy. And then you need to go after and reform entitlements, and that means Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Should you do it all at once? Well, because we're probably 10 years away from that day of reckoning. The answer now is yes. 30, 40 years ago, no, you didn't have to do it all at once. But we have a political class, and that includes the leadership of both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. I say they haven't gotten the memo. They haven't gotten the message. The Democratic Party wants to expand on spending, add new programs, and budget more money for these programs. It's not going to work because why is there a day of reckoning? If you keep borrowing money, more and more money means you're going to have to pay more and more interest. And the people that loan you the money, and it's already happening, say, well, wait a minute. There's a risk that you might not pay us back. So if I'm going to lend you money, you're going to have to pay me higher interest rates because there's a definite risk now. It's not risk-free. At one time, government debt, treasury securities, whether they're short-term like treasury bills, intermediate-term like 5 years notes or bonds 10 years or more, were considered risk-free securities. They're no longer risk-free. You don't have a $21 trillion plus national debt and $200 trillion plus unfunded liabilities. Now, if you want to buy government federal bonds, fine. If foreigners want to do it, that's fine with me. I don't consider them risk-free. I wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole. And don't tell me the United States will never default. I have news for you. The United States has already defaulted. Remember the Continental Congress and the money they printed? Nations default all the time. Russia? What happened to Russia? Not 200 years ago, about 19 years. It defaulted on all its debt. We're not going to pay it. Now, do I think the United States will ever come to that? What they'll do, ladies and gentlemen, and they're doing it, they're starting to do it again. They're printing money and monetizing the debt. Now, they like jargon. The jargon was quantitative easing 1, quantitative easing 2. What were they doing? They were buying treasury securities. You see, what's going to happen is, and it's already happened, you need buyers when the treasury goes into the financial markets to sell more debt. You need buyers. And if you offer a very low interest rate, you can have and do have what's called a failed auction because they use an auction process to sell it. So who's the buyer of first resort? It's the Federal Reserve. And that's what was going on. And now they're trying to unwind their position in government securities as well as mortgage-backed securities. And it got up to $4.4 trillion. They have gradually sold some of that off. I'm giving you this background because a lot of people think, why are you talking about this? We can continue doing this forever and ever and ever. Well, no, you can't. It eventually, there is a day of reckoning. And what usually happens is suddenly you're going to see a spike in interest rates on government treasuries. And that's when you know the day of reckoning has arrived. And then what does that mean, folks? A larger and larger and larger percentage of the budget will go to servicing the debt, paying the interest. And you got to pay the interest. That comes first before everything. The national debt, the interest on the national debt is going to squeeze and squeeze and squeeze and squeeze down the budgets of all these departments. 8 of them have to go. I'm not going to go over that. I went over this last time. And I would say 10 departments need to be permanently closed. Are the Democrats recommending this? No, they want to expand it. Happy days are here again. No, happy days are not here again. Because what happens? As the debt gets bigger and bigger and you relate it to the percentage of GDP, and the line you don't want to cross, and we've already crossed it, is roughly around 90%. Then you're in a dangerous situation, and more of your budget goes to pay interest on the debt. And we've crossed that line, and we're headed to Armageddon. Between now and 2040, I think this is around 2028, 2030, it's going to hit with a vengeance. It's just going to get worse and worse because there's no leadership in Washington, either on the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. That's why I say, ladies and gentlemen, what you need to do is stand up a political party that believes in the Constitution, believes in fiscal responsibility, believes in balanced budgets, because otherwise, if you don't do this and continue, you're in a bad habit. Your bad habit is you vote either Democrat or Republican. And neither party today is worth it. Now, I'm looking at the time, and I'm really out of time, but there's one other story I want to spend a couple of minutes on. Today, President Trump awarded the Medal of Honor to a veteran that died around 20 years ago. He was a World War II veteran, a true hero that saved many, many people in his company. And I do have, before I forget, the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is to go to my companion blog, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And if you do, under my picture, you'll have links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows. But under that, you have my show prep, my notes, photographs, cartoons, articles, information on the stories I'm covering. Let me play the ceremony.
The President of the United States of America, authorized by Act of Congress, March 3rd, 1863, has awarded in the name of Congress the Medal of Honor to First Lieutenant Garland M. Connor, United States Army, for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his own life above and beyond the call of duty. First Lieutenant Garland M. Connor distinguished himself by acts of gallantry and intrepidity while serving with Company K, 3rd Battalion, 7th Infantry Regiment, 3rd Infantry Division on the morning of January 24, 1945, near the town of Hausen, France. German forces ferociously counterattacked the front left flank of the 7th Infantry Regiment with 600 infantry troops, six Mark VI tanks, and tank destroyers. Lieutenant Connor, having recently returned to his unit after recovering from a wound received in an earlier battle, was working as the intelligence officer in the 3rd Battalion command post at the time of the attack. Understanding the devastating effect that the advancing enemy armor could have on the battalion, Lieutenant Connor immediately volunteered to run straight into the heart of the enemy assault to get to a position from which he could direct friendly artillery on the advancing enemy forces. With complete disregard for his own safety, Lieutenant Connor maneuvered 400 yards through the enemy artillery fire that destroyed trees in his path and rained shrapnel all around him, while unrolling telephone wire needed to communicate with the battalion command post. Upon reaching the battalion's front line, he continued to move forward under the enemy assault to a position 30 yards in front of the defending United States forces, where he plunged into a shallow ditch that provided minimal protection from the advancing enemy's heavy machine gun and small arms fire. With rounds impacting all around him, Lieutenant Connor calmly directed multiple fire missions, adjusting round after round of artillery from his prone position until the enemy was forced to halt its advance and seek cover behind a nearby dike. For 3 hours, Lieutenant Connor remained in his compromised position, enduring the repeated onslaught of German infantry, which at one point advanced to within 5 yards of his position. As German infantry regrouped and began to mass in an overwhelming assault, Lieutenant Connor ordered friendly artillery to concentrate directly on his own position, having resolved to die, if necessary, to destroy the enemy advance. Ignoring the friendly artillery shells blanketing his position and exploding mere feet from him, Lieutenant Connor continued to direct artillery fire on the enemy assault swarming around him until the German attack was finally broken. By his heroism and disregard for his own life, Lieutenant Connor stopped the enemy advance. The artillery he expertly directed while under constant enemy fire killed approximately 50 German soldiers and wounded an estimated 100 more, preventing what would have undoubtedly been heavy friendly casualties. His actions are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself, the 3rd Infantry Division, and the United States Army.
Now, President Trump is giving the Medal of Honor to his surviving wife. I pulled from Wikipedia the biography, and what's interesting, this gentleman won 3 silver stars, 1 bronze star, and he should have been awarded the Medal of Honor. Now he has, and he was wounded, I think, 6 times. He was a true hero. With that, let me play my closing song, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.